Hari. Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Gacharya Ashtotarashata Shishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantaraj Shimam Bhagavatam Ki Dai Gaura Premanandi O glories to the assembled devotees O glories to the assembled devotees O glories to the assembled devotees O glories to Shishiguru and Shigauranga
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Antrakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha So today's verse we're continuing on the chapter, The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So that's Canto 7, Chapter 13, and Text 7. So we can chant responsibly. Nashakchatreshu sajeta. Nopa jiveta jivikam Vada vadam svaye tarkan Paksham kamcha na samshrayet Na shakchatreshu sajetam No pai jiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashak chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Please chant. Nashak chatreshu sacheta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashat chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashak chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashak chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashak chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. Nashak chatreshu sajeta. No pajiveta jivikam. Pada padam svajetarkan. Paksham kamcha nasam shrayet. So the word for word translation, Srila Prabhupada. Na, not. Ashat shastreshu, literature like newspapers, novels, dramas, and fiction. Sajeta, one should be attached or should indulge in reading. Na, not. Upajiveta, one should try to live. Jivikam, upon some professional literary career. Vada vadam, unnecessary arguments on different aspects of philosophy. Chayajit, one should give up. Tarkan, arguments and counter-arguments. Paksham, fashion. Kamcha, any. Na, not. Samshrayet, should take shelter of. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Literature that is a useless waste of time. In other words, literature without spiritual benefit should be rejected. One should not become a professional teacher as a means of earning one's livelihood, nor should one indulge in arguments and counterarguments, nor should one take shelter of any cause or faction. Purport. A person desiring to advance in spiritual understanding should be extremely careful to avoid reading ordinary literature. The world is full of ordinary literature that creates unnecessary agitation in the mind. Such literature, including newspapers, dramas, novels, and magazines, is factually not meant for advancement in spiritual knowledge. Indeed, it has been described as a place of enjoyment for crows. Tadvaya Sham Tirtam. Anyone advancing in spiritual knowledge must reject such literature. Furthermore, one should not concern oneself with the conclusion of various logicians or philosophers. Of course, those who preach sometimes need to argue with the contentions of opponents, but as much as possible, one should avoid an argumentative attitude. In this connection, Srila Madhavacharya says, aprayo jana paksham na samshrayet, na prayo jana pakshi syan, na vrita shishya bandakrit, na choda shinaha shastrani, na virudani chapyaset, na vyakyo yalpa jiveta, na nisadan samacharet, evam bhutu jati yati, tad eka sharano harim. There is no need to take shelter of unnecessary literature or concern oneself with many so-called philosophers and thinkers who are useless for spiritual advancement, nor should one accept a disciple for the sake of fashion or popularity. One should be callous to these so-called shastras, neither opposing nor favoring them, and one should not earn one's livelihood by taking money for explaining shastra. A sannyasi must always be neutral and seek the means to advance in spiritual life, taking full shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. So here Narada Muni is continuing to describe the principles that regulate the life of the sannyasi. So in the introduction of the chapter, there was a mention that the behavior of the perfect person, or in that behavior, the sannyasi needs to give up this path of unnecessary arguments, and he shouldn't depend on anybody under any circumstances. So those were the two things that were highlighted. So if one's examining this particular ashram, and it's the ashram of the Paramahamsa, the topmost ashram, Srila Prabhupada, first of all, states that it's an ashram that is the ashram of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna has given all his blessings for that ashram. And the spiritual master has taken shelter under that ashram. So the symptoms or the things that indicate that someone is a spiritual master or a paramahamsa, somebody who's taking shelter within this ashram, they're actually described, and I'm going to read a verse which describes the way one can identify such a personality. And this is found where there's a discussion between King Nimi and the sage Sri Buddha, Sri Prabuddha. So King Nimi is asking, how can even a foolish materialist cross over this illusory energy of the Lord? All these things that are so attractive. He has, there's a whole listing of them, literature that's in the form of newspapers, magazines, etc., or even the writings of various philosophers. So he wants to know, this is the question he's asking, how can you actually overcome this illusory energy of the Lord? And his question is, it seems so insurmountable, even for those who self-control. So he wants to know how this can be done. So the response that's given to him by sage Prabuddha is the following. This is from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 3rd chapter, 21st verse. So I'm going to read the Sanskrit and then get into the translation. So tasmat gurum prapajyate jignasa shreya utaman shabde para cha nishnatam. And brahmani upashamashrayam. So this is a translation. So this is the response of sage Prabuddha. Any person who's seriously desiring of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. And this is the interesting part. The qualification of the spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of those conclusions. So such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. So we've just heard Narada Muni saying that actually the necessity for the sannyasi is not to be indulging in arguments and counter-arguments. And here we're hearing a definition of what's the characteristic that defines somebody in this Paramahamsa stage, and that is that that personality is able to present arguments and deliberations to convince others of the conclusions of the scriptures. So there isn't actually a contradiction, because the key is that the arguments or the deliberations that are being presented by the Paramahamsa, they're actually presenting the conclusions of the scriptures. So it's very much deliberately based on the Vedas. So as opposed to arguments or counter-arguments that, you know, can be drawn from many different sources, and in many cases it's knowledge that's different from the knowledge that's coming from the Vedas, because it's not realized knowledge and it's not coming from an authoritative source. So now Srila Prabhupada, he points out that the arguments that are being presented by the Paramahamsa, they usually have a purpose. And the purpose is to deal with the contentions of those who opposed to such conclusions. So the Paramahamsa has to be able to actually deal with those persons who oppose to the conclusions. So you, at least I'm aware that my spiritual master goes into situations where he's dealing with persons who are in some professional sphere. So maybe in front of him is a group of persons who are working in the computer industry. So he's having to actually present the conclusions of the Vedas to persons who are not thinking about that at all. They're thinking about technological things. So it's quite a daunting task. You imagine having an audience in front of one that's not at all thinking anything connected to the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, and one is then having to sort of bring them to understand something of those conclusions. So this is the extraordinary ability of the personalities that are in this ashram. So, and there's a second reason that the Paramahamsas have to have this ability to be able to put forward very nice arguments, is that they sometimes have to deal with persons who are falsely considering themselves very learned. And but behind that learned front, there's something that's not visible, and that is that there's some sort of addiction to materialistic activities, meaning that behind that, all that learning, the subject matter that they're knowledgeable in or skilled in, there's this incredible weakness, which is the materialistic part that's driving them, which is that intention to possess or enjoy things. So, and the teachings of the Vedas are such that when that drive is there, that, hidden part, not visible through that learning that's been presented, then they're actually getting tangled up in all kinds of illusions. So the thinking cannot possibly be clear and direct or perfect. So, in fact, when the Paramahamsa is dealing with persons in that category, those that are, falsely learned, it's called falsely learned, he's actually dealing with persons whose lives are very empty. So there's just the front of knowledge, but behind there's emptiness, as opposed to the knowledge that the Paramahamsa is presenting, which is incredibly full. Not only is it knowledge that's been put out there, but it's been personally understood, integrated, and practiced in every sphere of life. So it's perfect knowledge. So the persons that are not self-controlled, so this is contrasting the Paramahamsa, who's the epitome of being a self-controlled person. So this is sometimes the audience of the Paramahamsa. It's persons that are trying to find happiness in various kinds of relationships, and those relationships can be in the form of their friends, or it can be through having some parental love for their children, or they're trying to find happiness in serving somebody, maybe, the particular boss in a particular corporation, or even in their matrimonial relationships. So the persons are actually have their energies invested in those relationships in order to find their happiness. So here's the Paramahamsa presenting a different view of where happiness lies. So naturally, there's a big obstacle to overcome. So there has to be that a very integrated, realized knowledge to be able to penetrate that huge obstacle within the hearts of persons. So now here's Srila Prabhupada, who's a perfect example of a spiritual master, the Paramahamsa, who's going to use an argument to convince somebody of a scriptural conclusion. So he may actually directly speak to such persons, and he would say, the object of such feelings, finding happiness in these kind of ways is just actually a material body, which is temporary, and it's going to be devastated by the laws of nature. So those loving feelings, he might state, should be directed towards the spiritual body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and the reason for this is he's the place where beauty and transcendental bliss are stored in large quantities. So, he may conclude that as a spiritual master presenting an argument, that those who haven't learned this art of directing their love to Krishna, their lives would be empty. So this is something of the kind of arguments we're reading when we're actually studying the scriptures. I mean, it's very clear arguments for why something should be a particular way or what the conclusion is and why that conclusion is the correct one. So this is a small example. So the principle or the rule of conduct for the sannyasi of rejecting literature which has no spiritual benefit, which is in this verse Srila Narada Muni is pointing as being a rule of conduct for a sannyasi. It's valid because the sannyasi has the function of bringing somebody who's sincere, a sincere student in spiritual life back to Krishna. So this function requires him to become very experienced in Vedic literature. There isn't really room for anything else. It's he has to become very experienced in Vedic literature. So it means that the spiritual master is studying the Vedic literature. The spiritual master is observing a life around him in a very detached way, because one gets a great deal of knowledge just by observation. And he's integrating the observations with the conclusions that are coming from the arguments presented by our acharyas in the scriptures. And it's becoming realized. So he has to be deeply experienced and in the Vedic literature. And this experience also means that he's got a practical understanding. So it's not just read, but it's actually practically understood, and he actually knows how to practically apply it. So now the reason this is possible, of course, is as say Sri Prabhupada said, the sannyasi has left aside all material considerations. So the sannyasi is not actually thinking, I actually need to consider the various philosophers or Western philosophers who've actually presented various conclusions, and now I should integrate that necessarily into my presentation. All those material things are completely left aside. It's purely a focus on the Vedic literature. And he's also not actually thinking, oh, it's going to be extremely uncomfortable to be in front of a group of computer professionals who're not thinking at all about the Vedic conclusions. Oh, yeah, too uncomfortable. None of that. Fearlessly goes into any situation because all the weight of the knowledge is coming with him, and he has that dependence on and complete trust in the conclusion of the Vedas. So so Srila Prabhupada refers to this kind of putting aside all material considerations as leaving the glittering illusion of materialistic society, friendship, and love. So that's what the sannyasi has left behind completely. He's not actually, thinking that, happiness or love is to be found somewhere in society, or there's some happiness in the material world. There's complete detachment. So he's given up all those false ideas of where that happiness is going to lie in those areas of society or in those relationships within society. So this is, in fact, the definition that Krishna gives of the sannyasi: the giving up of activities based on material desires. So any activity he's performing, and this is in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, in the 3rd verse, the material desire here that we're looking at is, say, the reading of a newspaper, having a particular kind of motivation with the reading of a newspaper. So I heard once Jayadwaita Maharaj giving a class and saying that, in the BBT, devotees used to get one newspaper a week. Maybe it was a Sunday paper, I don't know. And they would spend time during the week reading the newspaper. And then at some point, they sat down and calculated how much time they were using to read the newspaper. And when they looked at the amount of time that reading that one newspaper took, they definitely decided the newspaper had to go because it takes up a great deal of time, never mind the time that's spent in contemplating what one has actually read. So, and also, so the motivation is also important. In a regular person's life, the picture is of the person always sitting, holding up the newspaper and drinking some beverage in the morning, and that's some sort of pleasure. Somebody I know who contacts me every now and again from the country I used to live in tells me that the ritual is every morning to go for a beverage in a particular little shop with beverages and read the editorial section of the newspaper. And the reason that this ritual is followed is that the editorial section gives the opinion of the general populace about whatever's going on. And this, for this person, is extremely important. He gets some sense of where the thinking is or the current views are in the population. So ritualistically, this is done every day. So now, naturally, this wouldn't be the kind of knowledge that would be of any interest to a sannyasi, getting the current views of the population on different political topics of no interest. The sannyasi has given up performing activities for results, because these are all result-orientated activities. Even a simple matter like reading a newspaper, there's some motive in mind. or even like, I was just thinking of myself, like I get a photography magazine. So for myself, the motivation is, I may actually understand a little bit more about lighting, or I may understand a little bit more about an approach to tackling some subject matter in relation to lighting. So that's usually my slant, but that would be a magazine. Again, sannyasi has no interest whatsoever. There's nothing that needs to be developed in any way. All the knowledge lies within the Vedas. So he's completely dedicated to that. So, but he's not giving up. The activity that the sannyasi is not giving up is the activity that leads to advanced spiritual knowledge. And that is the study of the Vedas. So what the sannyasi is doing, he's performing activities that, or sacrifices for the purification of the heart and for the advancement of spiritual science. So now, going back to the rule of conduct for the sannyasi, to not become a professional teacher. Now, becoming a teacher means that one's earning a livelihood. And this obviously isn't in keeping with the sannyasi's prescribed duty, because a profession means that one's earning a livelihood from this activity of teaching. So the sannyasi's duty is completely different. If the sannyasi is teaching, his duty is to try and connect the persons in front of him to Krishna. So now, to merely be a scholar means that one doesn't necessarily have the potency to do that, to connect somebody to Krishna. I mean, I remember when I was studying philosophy, often the word transcendental was used in Western philosophy, but the persons had no transcendental connection whatsoever. There was no connection to Krishna at all. So they don't have that ability to make the connection either, because they're not situated in that transcendental position. So the word is just used. So so then again, the sannyasi is the one who knows the signs of Krishna. And he's following, in actually, Lord Chaitanya's dictation for what the sannyasi should be doing. And these are the words of Lord Chaitanya. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Krishna as they're given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in the land. So those are the instructions of Lord Chaitanya for a sannyasi, or one in this varna. So it is by the order and authority of the Supreme Lord that one can become a spiritual master. That's what Lord Chaitanya is saying. And it's not by one's own erudition. That's not how it actually is that one's in this particular position. And Krishna explains this too. And I'm going to read something from the Bhagavad Gita 9:13, because this is Krishna's explanation of how it's not one's own erudition that puts one in that position. So, Mahatmanas tu mam partha divim prakritim ashritaha bhajanti ananya manaso nyatva bhutadimayam. O Sanaprita, those great souls who are not deluded, the great souls are under the protection of divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So the sannyasi is not diverting the attention to anything outside of Krishna. Like, for example, mentioning this verse was putting one's attention on some cause or some faction. So the reason for this is that he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. And he himself, he's developing. Because, you know, one wonders often, how is the sannyasi getting his kind of happiness or love, or even this sort of being able to put his arguments very nicely and his deliberations forward very nicely to bring persons to Krishna. It says that he's actually in the association of other pure devotees who always engaged in this kind of activity of unswerving service to Lord Krishna. So you could say that the sannyasi takes great care in the matter of controlling the five senses and his mind, and he's always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. That's all he does. And as a result of this, he's experiencing transcendental happiness. And this gives him the strength to remain detached from all kinds of sense gratificatory activities, you know, the reading of newspapers, magazines, etc., getting interested in causes, because he's cultivating that attachment for the pure, complete whole, the the source of all satisfaction, and that's Krishna. So, he's renouncing this thirst for material enjoyment by engaging in this service that he's often engaged in, which is bringing, connecting persons to Krishna. So these are some simple thoughts. It was a fairly simple verse. I couldn't think too deeply because it's not also my own realization being in that position. So I've just been able to present a little bit of what I've understood. So if anybody has some deeper thoughts, I'd be very grateful.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned something that it was it sort of ring a bell on my personal experience in terms of exposing oneself to this. He mentioned magazines and literature, but even, you know, any news and type of thing, but any type of theme or talks, you know, sometimes one listen to some talk show or something like that. And when one exposes, in my experience, is true. What Prabhupada says is that it agitates the mind in the purport, and becomes a complete distraction. And you mentioned in the class how the example that His Holiness Jaya Advaita Maharaj gave on the BTG staff, that all of a sudden when you sort of wake up from the whole experience, you know, so much time has been wasted that it doesn't add to your, you know, service or to your spiritual activities. And yesterday we were listening about time, you know, and the usage of time and how time is a representation, it's a form of the Lord that is giving us the opportunity to reform. So the agitation of the mind thing is quite something, because what happened is that you expose yourself and then you get sort of absorbed, something gets agitated, that wants a little more, and then wants a little more, and then wants a little more, and then you start to think, and then it sometimes comes up, you know. So there's this type of experiences. I recently, you know, my sort of bodily attachment of you know, being of a particular country, you know, has been agitated by exposing myself to the political news, you know, and the transition that my country of origin has been going through. So, and then that takes so much time, and then every day I wonder, okay, what's happening? And then the other day I came to realize is that every day is the same thing. It's almost the same news. It's just like, you know, a different shape of the same news. They don't no more change. They just continually, like Prabhupada said, chewing the chew. It's the same thing. Just now, instead of being this problem, but it's the same thing. So it's a waste of time. And I wish the pastor's coming. I was appreciating that.
Yeah, it's when one's practicing spiritual life, everything becomes an act of sacrifice. So in order to perform the sacrifice, one is rejecting that activity that's not in line with the sacrifice. So what you were describing, getting absorbed in that is certainly breaking that whole mood of thinking to make sacrifices for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one has to definitely minimize to actually keep one's focus on making sacrifices. So it's acting in the mode of goodness where there's a right time, there's a right place, there's a right moment. So one performs the activity as an act of sacrifice. So that is something, obviously, it's not fitting into the whole mode of goodness way of seeing things, that one's performing an act of sacrifice. Rather, it's an indulgence in some materialistic activity. So certainly it has to be minimized, because it's also breaking one's focus of performing sacrifice.
Thank you very much. I always liked the way you did a lot of research for whatever you say. Some people never say what they think, and some people never think what they say. Did that sound right? I was just thinking some things I cited from Srila Prabhupada's books, small phrases. He said he was reading, I think, Time magazine, and he said, "Oh, a fantastic arrangement of phantasmagoria," you know, and then a network of illusions. And then he said, "The time factor is very subtle. We don't see how time is passing. You know, it's just very subtle. You know." Then Prabhupada says, "I am speaking, and you are learning. But I am learning by seeing how you are hearing." So, you know, that was one thing that I think it was in the Lilamrita. And then I was thinking, I used to read Emerson and Thoreau, and they were, this is back in the 1850s and 1840s. They were kind of like contemporaries, you know, were in touch with Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he was about the same age. And they talk about the futility of material existence even back then, you know, and how people are just totally geared for economic development, like in this country. Well, you know, the struggle for existence, you know, and how it's unnecessary that if people lived a more simple life, you know. And then that verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, whatever you wish to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different names and forms to disturb the mind, as a boat on the water has no resting place. Do you remember that? It's in the first canto, I believe. So those are just a few things that came to my mind. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Thoreau, that in the 1850s there was the even philosophers outside of the Vedic conclusions are looking and commenting on the futility of regular material existence. So it's the sannyasi is taking it as a given fact that there's a yearning for something more in the heart of everyone. Everyone is thirsting for some kind of happiness. That's why all these complicated arrangements and all this literature that, you know, is meant to excite one in some way. So one can actually only be extremely grateful to these great personalities that are tirelessly going out into society and even putting themselves in very unusual situations with unusual audiences just to somehow help the person make that connection with Krishna, who's the source of all happiness. So one has to be so in awe and grateful that one has even contact with such great personalities. So Jitendra Prabhu, thank you for reading Srila Prabhupada's particular quotes, because there's such a great personality who performed those acts. He went all around the world doing that very thing that, you know, we've been speaking about here, that is the particular duty of the sannyasi, but it almost seems going beyond all normal considerations. What incredible discomforts one doesn't know of, all the particular little sacrifices that are made to be able to do that. And one person does that, and there's, I heard recently, it's 72 sannyasis in ISKCON, so it's not a huge number of personalities, 72 great personalities who have taken on this kind of task to break through that whole huge barricade of ideas of what material enjoyment is. So we have to really be so grateful that they've actually done it, because even our presence here to be in contact with the Vedas is because one came into contact with just such a personality. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.